In an attempt to connect with the young people in Dunfermline High School on Friday and hopefully to allow them another window through which to look at remembrance, I told the story of Bess Walder Cummings, who had been 15 years old in 1940. Her true story has been adapted into a play called Lifeboat. She herself died in 2010. Like 3,500 other children and young people during World War II, she and her younger brother Lewis were to be evacuated as part of a scheme organised by the Children's Overseas Reception Board, which placed children with family members in Canada, the USA, South Africa, Australia or New Zealand. On the 13th of September 1940, they set sail from Liverpool for Canada on the City of Benares, a pre-war cruise liner. There were about 400 people on board, 90 of whom were children. Although they were sad to leave home, all of them had already experienced the impact of war on their homes. Only the night before leaving, five of the children had been bombed out of their homes. There was lots of fun on the boat. The weather was good, and away from the rationing of home, there was lots of food available. In Bess's obituary, it talks of her having the first opportunity to taste ham rather than Spam. It was a delicacy for her that she had never had before. For all of them, it felt like a holiday. But after 4 days at sea, the weather changed, and in the midst of a gale, the passengers retreated to their cabins. At 10:30 p.m. on the 17th of September, there was a loud explosion which damaged the ship, particularly to the area where the children had been sleeping. They'd been torpedoed by a U-boat. The German submarines had been following the progress of a convoy of ships and decided to attack the largest one. And the largest one was the cruise liner. All the other ships had scattered, following the procedure to ensure they were all safe. That was what happened in war. A convoy set off, and because they were passenger ships and not warships, when one of them was attacked, the rest would take the rest of the passengers to safety. But the cruise liner began to sink. Bess managed to climb into a lifeboat with her friend Beth and other passengers and crew. It overturned, and she clung to a rope along the keel as she watched the cruise liner sink. For 20 hours, Bess clung to the rope until she was rescued. She, her friend Beth, and a Lascar seaman were the only survivors from that lifeboat as they watched the other passengers slowly give in and then float away. They had gripped so tightly to the rope that their hands had to be cut free to rescue them. Of the 90 children on board, only 15 survived. And while she hadn't been able to find her brother on the boat, once they were rescued, miraculously, they found each other again. 60 years later, Bess was asked how she'd coped with what had happened, and she said, "We who were saved have had to come to terms with a problem of forgiveness, to forgive those who did so much harm to so many people and who have left a trail of misery and horror in their wake is not easy to obey. And to obey Christ's teaching on forgiveness when we say the Lord's Prayer is still, for some, greatly difficult in this context." In her adult life, Bess had met the wireless operator of the U-boat. He told her that when the crew had found out that the ship had been carrying children, many of them had broken down in tears. Some of them had left the submarine service as a result of the sinking. He, like others, had hoped he would be forgiven. There's lots to Bess's story that's not told in that brief outline, not least that out of her experiences of being rescued and then educated in Scotland, on her return to London, Bess became fearless, believing that she had been chosen and rescued for a purpose. She wanted to put something back into society and become a teacher. The obituary suggests that she was quite a fearless teacher, quite stern. I tell this story again this morning because I think it resonates with our readings, which encourage us to grow towards God, to grow in God, and to see God grow in others. It's important as we read the gospel to remember that Jesus lived in a Roman province. Loving your enemy was as difficult for that new group of followers as it is for the followers today. As Jesus lays out what discipleship means, he does so with the knowledge that it is not easy to tell the difference between our friends and our enemies. As we listen to his words, we know that in the days that will follow, these people that he calls disciples, that he calls friends, some of these are the people who will betray him, deny him, and abandon him. They're the kind of people we might call enemies. And yet, he loves them. A reading that we struggle with because it calls us to the high ideal of perfection. It's worth exploring what the Greek word translated as perfect means. Telos is not so much about moral perfection, but instead about reaching an intended outcome. It's used to describe an arrow hitting its target. When it hits its target, that's telos. It's used to describe when a peach grows on a tree, when the fruit is born, that's telos. So it's about an outcome or a completion or a determined end. It's not so much about perfection. The words "be perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect" could be translated as "be the person and community God created you to be." Be complete as your Father in heaven is complete. The gospel gives a sense of being with God, growing towards God, and then growing into God. Allowing ourselves to truly become the people we're invited to be. Each destination we think we have reached on our faith journey becomes just a marker on that continuing travel of allowing God to create heaven within and around us. From the book of Revelation, we are returned to creation to draw refreshment and nourishment to be the people of God. In the new Eden of which John the Divine speaks, humanity is to place God or to find God at the centre of life. The 12 crops suggest fruit for all. In the paradise, the waters bring grace, comfort and glory to the roots of our growing. Post-war, in remembrance, what kind of community are we intended to be? In fact, if we're honest, we're not post-war. We're in war. It's just not on our doorstep. As we remember conflicts of the past and the conflicts of today, we're challenged to ask ourselves, who are our enemies? And in that challenge, we recognize that our enemies are not nameless, unknown foreigners. Instead, our enemies share our stories and carry the same burdens we do. Yesterday, in the midst of the interfaith event held in the church hall, there was no denying the shared humanity of the different faith and ethnic groups gathered together. As the Polish community told their stories of integration into Scotland, the Syrians found similarities and resonance with their experiences. And even the Scottish song sung spoke of the emotion of longing and missing and of the importance of nourishment and sharing if we are to grow. In our remembering today, we mourn the loss of life, the distress and upset caused and felt. But we also remember the continuing drive to love our enemies, that together we might plant roots that allow God's intended creation of peace and equanimity to reign. Amen.